This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. Here's your HeartWise host, Dr. James Markham.
Well, I'm glad everyone has joined us today on HeartWise, and I hope you're enjoying as nice a day as we are here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. There seems to be so much in the news now about health, and healthcare is a big deal now because it, you know, takes up so much of our time, and everyone has health, and we don't want anyone to lose health. It also is a big economic issue in the times that we live in. No matter whether it's the United States or Australia or wherever you might live, everyone's interested in healthcare. And each week on HeartWise, we try to bring in a guest that can enlighten us and let us know what's out there that we need to talk about. We have you send in your questions for our website. That's heartwiseministries.org. And when we have a lot of questions, we bring a specialist in. Well, we've had a lot of questions regarding prostate, urological issues. That's the process in our bodies that deals with our eliminating of waste through the kidneys. And we have a specialist today, Dr. Lee Jackson, who is a urologist that practices at Memorial Hospital in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And Lee, we want to welcome you to HeartWise.
Well, thank you. It's a thrill for me to be here.
Well, we're just glad. Now, what got you interested in being a urologist out of all the things you could have gone into?
It's a good question. You know, when you're going through medical school, you're actually required to start making some decisions early on as to what you're going to do. And I knew that I wanted to be a surgeon. And I wound up just by accident of rotation assignments with a lot of guys that were going into urology. And I found them to be very easygoing, personable. I got along well with them. I had not thought of urology before that. I'd primarily interested in orthopedics, for instance. But I'm not very good at working in the garage, and
right.
Just power tools, I was not comfortable with them. And I liked the personality of these guys going into urology. I looked carefully at it, and it seemed to suit my personality well. And
good.
So that's why I pursued it.
Well, you know, a lot of our listeners out there, to them the word urology is just a big word. How would you describe what urology is and what you do?
Well, and that word oftentimes puts people off. I mean, I don't get a lot of questions at parties, for instance, once they truly understand what we do. Urologists it's a subspecialty of surgery. Mm-hmm. We're specifically trained to treat diseases of the urinary tract, kidneys, bladder, prostate, and genitalia.
Okay, great. Well, what we've done is we have a lot of questions that come into our website from literally all over the world, and we want to just jump into those and answer that for our listeners right now, because if one person has that question, I found out probably 100 people have that question. This question has to do with PSA, and we're going to have to explain what that is. It says, when should a PSA be ordered? What does this test actually measure, and when it is useful? And I heard that there's recent recommendations saying that we might not should check that routinely. So let's start talking about PSA.
Very good. That's a great question. There's not a short answer to that, so I'll do the best I can. PSA stands for prostatic specific antigen, antigen just being another name for protein. So the PSA is a benign, harmless, normal protein that is made only by the prostate. So we can use PSA, its changes, its behavior, its level, to estimate what may be going on in the prostate. Where the controversy comes in is that it is commonly used to estimate a man's risk for having prostate cancer.
Okay.
But because it's specific just to the prostate and not specific to cancer, we have to be very careful about how we interpret it. Just because a PSA may be increasing or is at what we may consider a high level doesn't necessarily mean that a man has prostate cancer. So we interpret the PSA and change in PSA over time in the context of other risk factors for prostate cancer. With ethnicity, for instance, African Americans have an increased risk. Family history, it does tend to run in families. What the prostate feels like on exam. And then we may pursue our investigation with the biopsy if we think that man is at risk for prostate cancer based on his PSA level. But an elevated PSA in and of itself does not mean that someone has prostate cancer. So it's a bit of a blunt instrument.
Now, I'm going to hold you right and hold this. When I first started medicine years ago, we didn't have that test. We just did the old digital rectal examination, just felt it. Do we still do that?
We do, again, because we need as much information as possible to properly interpret the PSA. And like you, when I was in medical school and going through residency, we didn't have PSA. Mm-hmm. And prostate cancer is typically a silent condition.
Right.
And the first symptoms are from metastases or advanced disease. So about the only people that I was trained to take care of with prostate cancer had advanced disease or metastases. Right. Our urology wards were filled with men dying from and suffering from the consequences of advanced prostate cancer. It was terrible. And when the PSA became available in the late 80s and really started taking effect in about 1990, now we were able to look for prostate cancer while it was early, confined to the prostate, and we could have a meaningful impact on the disease. And in fact, since 1990, since we've been actively looking for prostate cancer, intervening early when needed, the mortality rate or death rate from prostate cancer has fallen 40%.
Wow.
That's pretty dramatic.
That is dramatic.
You would think that that would be celebrated rather than criticized and questioned. The other thing that's often overlooked and not mentioned is the incidence of metastases. And there's a considerable amount of suffering that goes with having metastases from prostate cancer. That has fallen 75%. When I was in training, most everybody presented with metastases. Now you see it about 4% of the time. It's just about been eliminated because of PSA testing.
Right. So there has been great. Now we talked about when is it useful?
Well, good question. When it depends on one's situation.
Okay.
If one has other risk factors such as ethnicity or family history, I have a family history. My father had prostate cancer. So I check mine pretty regularly. But I advise young men who have a family history, particularly if they have a strong family history, grandfather, uncle, father, all the male members, I suggest they check a baseline PSA at age 35.
Okay.
It should be less than one. If it is, then start checking it annually at age 40. If they don't have a family history or other risk factors, then just begin maybe a baseline at age 40, check it again at 45. As long as it's less than one, then they can start annually at 50. Others will just start annually at age 40. So the when to check it and the frequency to check it depends on whether or not one has other risk factors.
Now, I was I recently had a gentleman that I was serving as a general internist on, and as part of his everything, I did a full exam and checked his PSA, and I got a letter back from the insurance company saying that they would not cover for it. Was I a bad doctor in ordering a PSA without a gentleman with risk factors?
No, of course not. That was being a very responsible doctor. Unfortunately, our payors, insurance companies, bureaucrats in our government who are making recommendations that the insurance companies follow, don't see the value in PSA and have actually made a recommendation just recently in an official capacity to stop checking PSA.
Yeah, and yet you've told me in your career you've seen less metastases and we help save lives and prevent disease, and that's sort of been well documented.
It is well documented. Now, the flip side of that is many prostate cancers don't need treatment.
Right.
I mean, the confusing thing about prostate cancer and what makes it different from other cancers is that it is a highly variable cancer.
Okay.
There are cancers that are indolent and trivial and just need to be watched. We don't need to intervene. They don't present a threat to that man during his natural lifetime. And then there are other cancers that account for the 30,000 to 32,000 deaths we see each year. So the struggle is to sort out the trivial, indolent, harmless prostate cancer from the lethal prostate cancer. And in the course of diagnosing all these early prostate cancers, there have been and continue to be instances of overdiagnosis, overtreatment.
Well, just save that thought. We're about ready to go to break. And after the break, we're going to continue to talk about prostate cancer, prostate-specific antigen. We're talking with a specialist, Dr. Lee Jackson, urology. Stay with us. We're going to be right back after this short break on HeartWise.
In his book, The Ultimate Prescription, now available from Tyndale House Publishers, cardiologist Dr. James Markham writes, "I was reading a recent poll of men who were asked who they thought was the most influential male in the world today. Number one on the list was Don Draper, a character on a television series. He's not even a real person. Number two was Usain Bolt, an Olympic athlete who many believe defines the true spirit of competition, and President Barack Obama slipped in as number three. This is just another example of how the media has the power to create an influential character, market him as an ideal to the world, and affect the minds of a large segment of the population. That same media is doing the same thing when it comes to telling us how to build and maintain optimum health." Dr. Markham's book, The Ultimate Prescription, is available from Amazon.com and wherever quality books are sold. To learn more about health from a biblical perspective, visit HeartWiseMinistries.org. I'd like to take a moment to invite you to visit the HeartWise Ministries team on the internet. Stop by HeartWiseMinistries.org and discover for yourself that optimum health is not the result of favorable genes or the right combination of pharmaceuticals. No, optimum health is the result of making the right choices each and every moment of each and every day. If you're like me, you're probably a little confused about what the media and marketing moguls are feeding us. There are a lot of potions, pills, and promises out there. Some work, some don't, and some are downright dangerous. Whom do you believe? Whom do you trust? Board-certified cardiologist Dr. James Markham, founder-director of HeartWise Ministries, says there is a source of information that can be trusted and followed. That's the Bible, God's owner's manual, as he calls it, for us all. The information you find on HeartWiseMinistries.org is information backed by biblical truth. It can be trusted because God can be trusted. So stop by, won't you? That's HeartWiseMinistries.org.
Welcome back to HeartWise. I'm Dr. James Markham, and our special guest here today is Dr. Lee Jackson, and he's a specialist in urology. We've been talking about that, and it's such an interesting thing that males especially should pay attention to, and females who have males in their life should pay attention to, because we've been specifically talking about prostate cancer, answering a question about that. In our last segment, we talked about PSA, prostate-specific antigen, and in our discussions, Dr. Jackson, it seems to me, as a cardiologist, that here we have a test that actually has been shown to save lives, limit the metastases and suffering, and yet we're taking that test away where perhaps maybe we should spend money and learn how to use that test appropriately.
Exactly. I mean, that makes perfect common sense, yet that's not what we're seeing. It's very clear that prostate cancer is this highly variable cancer that presents different levels of threat to different individuals. We have a test that can help us find prostate cancer, and then the goal would be to differentiate and develop tools to distinguish one someone who needs treatment and is at risk and someone who doesn't, and be very reassuring to that person that this kind of cancer isn't going to hurt you. So our efforts and research should be, particularly with genetic labeling, genetically sequence these cancers, and this is being done, but I would love to see much more resources being brought to that so that we could be very specific.
It seems without checking the PSA, which is so commonly done in finding out early if there's a problem, we're going to start falling back the way we were 20 years ago.
Exactly. We're going to go right back to where we were 20 years ago. It's interesting. I believe the panel that made this recommendation didn't have any specialists on it by design. And the consequence is they're trying to review all the literature. The consequence of them not having any specialists on their panel is that they didn't have any organizational understanding or memory of the progress that's been made over 20 years since PSA helped us find prostate cancer early. If we find it early, we can have a meaningful impact. If we wait for symptoms and find it late, we can't.
Yeah, and I think that goes with a lot of the other malignancies, you know, whether it be colon cancer or dermatologic cancer. It only makes sense.
Right.
So I hope everyone out there that's hearing this, and Dr. Jackson, thank you for sharing this, because there's an awareness that needs to get out there. You know, the media has many different ways to, and if people don't have full knowledge, it's hard to make good decisions. Maybe these people that made these policy decisions didn't really understand the course of what's happened over the last 20, 30 years.
Well, I think that's the only way to explain this very puzzling recommendation to not look for something that you can have a positive impact on if you know it's there. Okay. To put your head in the sand doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so I think we answered that question pretty well. Let's go on to another question that's come into our heartwiseministries.org website. It says, I have a family history of prostate cancer. And it says, what can I do to lower my risk of developing this cancer? My father and uncle both had cancers in their 60s, and I am now 42.
Well, the most important thing you can do is be vigilant in looking for cancer. Mm-hmm. It does run in families. Again, I know this personally because I have a family history. There are probably different causes for different prostate cancers. Some may be caused by a virus, for instance.
Right.
There is an inherited form, which this individual is at risk for. There may not be anything he can do at all to prevent him from getting it, but if he does develop it, he needs to find it early. Just as a general recommendation, it is clear that a heart-healthy diet is a prostate-healthy diet. So I would recommend that for anyone, regardless of their other risk factors.
You know, one thing that I've noticed, this field called epigenetics, you know, what turns on our genes. You know, it seems like we don't really know right now what turns on certain genes, whether it be cancer gene, but if they are turned on, we want to find out quickly.
Absolutely.
And it seems like that field is so complicated that we're not going to understand that field. You know, whether an individual, whether it's turned on by a carcinogen like a cigarette smoke or anything. And I guess that was one of the things I guess this person was probably trying to ask, is if he stays away from cigarettes, was that going to help lower his risk of prostate cancer? You mentioned diet. So, you know, those type of things. But it only makes sense if you can't figure out what causes disease. You want to detect it early and treat it.
Exactly right.
And our next question has to deal with that. It says, my father has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, Dr. Jackson. And what will be his possible treatment options? I know you cannot be specific, but any information will help, as he's scared to death and is not sure if he wants anything done at all. So let's just give some just generalities about prostate cancer treatment.
Sure. Well, when I'm speaking with someone in the office that's come to me with a new diagnosis of prostate cancer, I want them to understand how we make management recommendations. So I explain, first of all, as we mentioned earlier, that prostate cancer is a highly variable cancer, so it's important that we know what kind of prostate cancer a man has. I reassure them that most prostate cancers grow slowly, so we always look at the risk that particular cancer presents to him in the context of his life expectancy. Mm-hmm. You know, when in his lifetime did it occur? What other health issues are there that may be of more immediate concern? And then we make recommendations for managing that risk over that life expectancy with one goal in mind, and that is that nobody die from prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. We don't want that for anybody because it is a terrible death, but we don't have to do the same thing to every person in order to achieve that goal. So depending on what kind of prostate cancer he has, what risk category, we will stratify men into one of four categories of risk and then manage each category a little differently. Depending on where he falls in that, we'll determine what the management recommendations are. And it may range from active surveillance, doing nothing, to intervention with either radiation or surgical management. Or we may need, in some high-risk guys, to combine those.
So one size doesn't fit all.
Not by any means. This is highly variable, and you really have to tailor your recommendations to that man's specific condition.
So there's an art to this, after all.
After all.
Now that's interesting, and I know you're an expert at robotic surgery. Mm-hmm. Now, what type of person might benefit from having robotic surgery? And tell our audience, what is robotic surgery?
Well, robotic surgery is really just a laparoscopic approach, meaning we don't make an incision. The surgeon's hands are not inside. It's a bit of an advance on laparoscopic surgery in that the instruments that mimic the motions of the surgeon's mm-hmm. hands are actually attached to a machine.
Wow.
And the instruments themselves are about the size of a match head. These are very small. They move like your hands mm-hmm. do. But rather than me holding those instruments, they're attached to the machine. My fingers fit into straps in another part of the machine. I make the motions of an operation. These little instruments mimic those motions and carry out the operation really without me ever touching the guy. The advantage to that is he gets better faster, mm-hmm. much quicker, you know, on the order of a couple of weeks rather than a few months. Now, this is an important advance because the men that generally need to give their most serious consideration to surgical management of their prostate cancer are guys who have a relatively long life expectancy, mm-hmm. guys in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. Well, in that age group, they're still working. And this technique, this approach, allows them to return to work and normal activity within a couple of weeks.
Okay. So what type of individual might you recommend having robotic surgery on their prostate?
Yeah, if I've got a man in his 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. or 60s who's otherwise healthy, he's got a life expectancy that exceeds 15 years, and he has a clinically important prostate cancer, not an indolent or trivial one, but one that is likely to progress during his lifetime, and this is a fellow that I'm going to advise that we need to intervene in a meaningful way so that he lives out his natural life expectancy free of prostate cancer, and surgical management for that young person is the best way to achieve that. And then as an approach to surgical management, let's take advantage of this laparoscopic approach with robotic technology rather than an open procedure which carries a much greater burden of treatment.
Right. And you can take out the entire prostate through this procedure?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, a lot of times when I used to practice internal medicine, we used to feel a prostate did not be right, and they used to do biopsies. Mm-hmm. Are you still doing that, and can you do that with a robotic procedure?
Well, no, biopsies are done
with
transrectal ultrasound guidance, spring-loaded needles. I will commonly suggest that a man be sedated, similar to sedation used for colonoscopy. Just you can do a better study, I think. It's much more comfortable, but that's not required. Many of these can be very safely done in the office. But then those biopsies tell us what kind of prostate cancer we have, helps us stratify them into a risk category, and then that guides management recommendations.
Wow. So I hope our listeners out there are understanding that you know, prostate is a cancer that, if detected early, can save lives.
Yes.
And save, you know, complications downstream. And every man, especially those with risk factors, needs to have the prostate examined by your, you know, nowadays, I'm not sure how many people are good at examining prostates, you know, because everyone got used to the prostate-specific antigen.
Right.
And if they take that away from us, boy, it's going to behoove a whole generation to learn to feel what a prostate should and shouldn't feel like.
Well, there are new studies being developed. There's a PSA being a normal protein that's specific to the prostate but not cancer specific, there is a new test available called PCA3, prostate cancer gene 3, which is a protein specific to cancer. We collect it in the urine. It's fairly new, but I think we'll see new technologies like that available that are more specific to prostate cancer so that we can still find it early.
Well, that's great. Well, we want to thank you, Dr. Lee Jackson, for being with us on HeartWise. If you want to get a hold of Lee Jackson, you can go to the website memorial.org, and there's a way in to find a physician. You can look him up. There's so much more to talk about urology, from stones to cancer and infections. We're going to have Dr. Jackson back again. If you have questions, send them to our website, heartwiseministries.org. Wishing you the best of health. I'm Dr. James Markham with Dr. Lee Jackson. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.